I bet you've caught yourself wondering about the when. When's that big thing going to happen? You know, when will those things we've been waiting for finally come to pass?
It's so human, right? We all try to peek into the future. And when you've got like religious texts laying out these huge events, it makes that urge even stronger.
Totally. It's like we can't help but try to piece it all together. And that brings us to the stuff you sent over.
Dr. Dave Matthewson.
Yeah. His teaching, Where Is His Coming? Session 5, the one about delay of the parousia in Revelation and all this, the theological and what it means for today's stuff.
Big title. Lots to unpack there.
That's where we're doing this deep dive. We're talking Revelation, one of the most like future-focused books in the Bible, and trying to get our heads around something that might surprise folks.
Mm.
The kind of different messages it seems to give about when exactly Christ returns, you know, the parousia.
It's so true. We often think of Revelation as this straight-up prediction of the end. But, like, we'll see. There's this fascinating push and pull within the book itself on the whole timing thing.
So our mission today, to go deeper. We're moving past just reading coming soon and thinking, okay, maybe not so soon. And actually grappling with the why behind those different perspectives. What's the deeper theological stuff going on in Revelation? And what does it mean for folks like us today?
Awesome. So let's start at the very beginning, like Revelation does. Right off the bat, you get this feeling that things are going to happen quickly.
Right. Chapter 1, verses 1 through 3, boom. These things must soon take place. And John, he makes it super clear the time is near. He's not burying the lead. He's setting the whole mood from the get-go.
And that feeling, it's not just a one-off comment either. It comes back full force at the very end of the book, too. Mm. Like, flip to Revelation 22. There it is again, verses 6 and 7, then 10, then 12, and of course the big one in verse 20. You know, Jesus himself saying, yes, I am coming soon. It's almost like the bookends of this entire vision are marked by this idea of nearness.
It really sets the stage for everything, doesn't it? And like Dr. Matthewson points out, this wasn't some brand new idea just for Revelation. If you look across the New Testament, there's this clear expectation that Christ's return is pretty close. Even Jesus talks about it in the Gospels. So those first believers, they were living with this very real sense that things were coming to a head, like any day now kind of feeling.
That's key to understanding the early church, right? This anticipation, this soonness, was woven into their whole faith. But as Matthewson gets at, that's not the whole story. Revelation, it's got this other thread running through it, one that speaks to the possibility of a delay, a waiting period.
Okay, yeah, let's talk about that, this idea of delay. Because honestly, it's easy to skip over it. We latch onto those coming soon verses, but maybe we don't spend as much time thinking about anything that might suggest, well, a bit of a wait. But Matthewson makes a strong case that John wasn't being confusing or contradicting himself here.
Not at all. Matthewson's point is John was deliberately dealing with both sides of the coin. This nearness and this potential for things not happening right away, when you think about it, the actual timing was unknown. So it makes total sense that John would prepare folks for more than one possibility.
He does this in a really striking way, too. That image from Revelation, the fifth seal, chapter 6, verses 9 through 11. Can you paint that picture for us? What's going on in that scene?
Picture this. As these seven seals are being opened, one by one, the fifth one reveals something really powerful. It's the souls of these believers who were killed, martyred for their faith. They're gathered under this altar in heaven, and they cry out to God, asking this heavy question, how long, O Lord, holy and true, until you judge those who live on the earth and avenge our blood?
How long? It just hits you, doesn't it? All their suffering, their desire for justice, it's right there in those words. As Matthewson points out, it also hints at something else, this idea that maybe they expected this vindication to have already come.
Absolutely. It implies the time has passed, that they've been waiting. They probably hoped for God's intervention, for justice, for their blood to be avenged sooner. And it's fascinating the answer they get. Each of them, they're given these white robes and told to rest a little while longer until the number would be completed, the number of those who would also be martyred, you know.
Rest a little while longer.
Mm-hmm.
Even in this moment where they're longing for justice, there's this acknowledgement that there's going to be more waiting, a delay. But Matthewson's right. That phrase, a little while longer, it keeps that feeling of things still being close. It's not like some far-off postponement.
That's a crucial point. The delay, it's not forever. And this cry, this human cry of how long, it echoes stuff we see throughout the Old Testament. I think Psalms, the prophets, all these expressions of longing, questioning when God's going to step in. This whole idea of waiting, wondering about God's timing, it's a constant part of our relationship with him.
Then you've got this interesting idea of the number would be completed. This concept of like a set count of future martyrs. Matthewson connects this to the bigger literary world at the time. All these examples of what they call apocalyptic literature.
Yeah. Texts like 1st Enoch, 4th Ezra, 2nd Baruch, they all use this image of a specific number of righteous people needing to be gathered or a certain amount of suffering happening before the final stuff goes down. It's a common thread in this kind of writing. Think of it like ancient stories. They use symbolic language, dramatic events to tell important truths. Good versus evil, final victory, and this idea of a set number before the showdown. It's a big part of those narratives.
So, John, he's tapping into this familiar way of thinking, not necessarily giving us a literal head count or a date on the calendar, but showing us this reality. A delay is possible. It's like he's saying, don't be surprised if Christ's return isn't immediate. Things need to play out, you know.
Yeah, precisely. Matthewson's point is, John wasn't trying to predict a 2,000-year gap or any specific length of time, really. He was saying, hey, waiting is a real possibility. And during that wait, God's people, they're called to be patient, to stay alert.
It's not just one passage either. Matthewson says that the whole way Revelation's put together, the structure of the book itself, it builds in this sense of delay, this back and forth between like expecting things to happen and then waiting some more.
It's so insightful. Matthewson shows how the literary stuff, the way the book's written, it mirrors this theological tension we're talking about. Revelation, it's got this cyclical feel, you know, it keeps bringing you to what feels like the absolute end, the climax, and then boom, pulls back, introduces a whole new set of events, like a series of almost endings that lead to like even more unfolding.
And he uses the seals as a perfect example of this, right? Mm-hmm. Chapter 5, the Lamb, he takes the scroll. It's this huge moment. You're thinking, okay, God's plan, it's about to go down.
Totally. Anticipation is through the roof. Then you get to chapter 6, the seals are being opened, and by the time you hit the 6th seal, it's insane. Huge earthquake, the cosmos is going haywire, people are hiding from God's wrath, terrified. It reads like the grand finale, you're like, this is it.
The end in chapter 6.
Hmm.
But like Matthewson's saying, that's nowhere near the end of the book. There's still a 7th seal, and then the trumpets and the bowls of judgment. It's almost like John's giving you a peek behind the curtain at what looks like the final act, and then he's like, hold on, there's more to this story than you think. It's not about a strict timeline. It's about John showing us that the end isn't just one quick bang. It's a whole period, this mix of crazy anticipation and pauses, you know.
And even that 7th seal doesn't even happen until chapter 8, which then leads to those trumpets, another whole set of judgments. And even those, they follow a similar pattern. The first 4, they come pretty quick. You get that feeling of things moving fast towards this final point.
But then they slow down again with the last 2 trumpets, right? They're explained in so much more detail, and there's this big gap between the 6th trumpet in chapter 9 and the 7th one finally sounding at the end of chapter 11. Like, what's going on there?
Right. And what's wild is Revelation 10 verses 6 and 7, right in the middle of this apparent delay, with that 7th trumpet still waiting to blow, you have this powerful angel. He swears a mighty oath that there will be no more delay. It's like this huge buildup of expectation, but then there's still so much of Revelation left. Things haven't wrapped up yet. So even when it feels like we're hitting a climax, Revelation is showing us, hey, there might be more unfolding than you initially thought.
It's like John's playing with our expectations on purpose. Keeps hinting at the end, but then reveals, nope, there's more coming. He does the same thing with those bowls in chapter 16.
Oh, totally. The bowls of judgment, they're poured out. It leads to the armies gathering for Armageddon, the big battle. You'd think, okay, the final showdown's about to explode right there in chapter 16. But the actual battle, it's not described then. Instead, you get what Matthewson calls intervening material in chapter 17 and 18, all about Babylon and its judgment. Then finally, Christ returns as judge in chapter 19.
So this start-stop, this cyclical way the book's laid out, it really hammers out this point. While Christ's return could be like any minute, there's also this built-in possibility, even probability of waiting. It's not just a straight line to the finish.
Exactly. All these literary pauses, these restarts,
yeah,
they match the theological tension we're trying to grasp. John, he's not contradicting himself. He's showing us what it means to live in the end times, this period that started with Jesus's first coming, without having a precise calendar for his second coming. You know, he's preparing us for both that possible immediate return and the very real possibility of a time of waiting.
And Matthewson makes it super clear. The point of all this, it's not about giving us some detailed timeline. It's about encouraging us to live in a certain way.
Yeah.
To be faithful, to share our faith no matter when Christ returns.
Yes. And understanding both the imminence and the delay, it has these huge theological implications. Mathewson focuses on a couple of big ones. First, the trustworthiness of Scripture itself.
Because if we only focus on those coming soon parts, and then, well, centuries go by, it's understandable that people might have a faith crisis, right? It makes you wonder, did the New Testament writers, even Jesus, did they get it wrong? Did they make a mistake in their predictions?
Absolutely. Mathewson acknowledges that this seeming discrepancy has caused a lot of people to wrestle with their faith. If the New Testament seemed to predict something immediate that didn't quite pan out the way some expected, it can make you doubt the whole thing, right? Like, could it be wrong about other stuff, too?
But when you understand that soonness language as more of a call to be ready to be watchful, not a precise prediction, it helps, doesn't it? And he mentions different ways to interpret what Jesus said about seeing the kingdom before death. Things like the transfiguration, the destruction of Jerusalem, or Pentecost. Maybe those sayings were fulfilled, just not in the way some folks initially thought.
That's the argument, that in a way, the end time kingdom, it started with Jesus' first coming. So the final, complete return, it could have happened any time since then. It's a relief to understand that this isn't about failed predictions. It's about understanding God's timing differently. And that way of seeing things, it protects the reliability of Jesus's and the apostles' teachings. Their focus on soonness, it becomes this ongoing call to be prepared, not a miscalculation.
The second big theological point Mathewson talks about is God's sovereignty and how this whole imminence versus delay thing fits into that bigger picture.
It gets at this deep mystery in the Bible, this idea of God being completely in control, but us humans still having responsibility. The New Testament writers, they present both sides confidently without trying to totally untangle them. They're sure about Christ's return ultimately, but they also say, hey, there might be a delay.
And he brings up this example of God's patience, how he delays judgment to give more time for people to turn back to him, to repent. It shows us that even though God knows the timing of everything, he still takes into account our choices, his desire for us to choose him.
Exactly. It's not a contradiction. It's a beautiful tension.
Yeah.
And it serves a purpose. Imminence. It's a warning against getting complacent. Like, live as if Christ's coming back any minute. And the delay tells us, don't make rash decisions. Don't get stuck on rigid timelines. It's all about living faithfully no matter what.
So let's get practical. What does all this mean for us today? Mathewson says the first thing is understanding this balance should actually make our faith stronger. It should build our confidence in Jesus and the whole Bible.
That's right. When we realize that the New Testament isn't about messed up predictions, but about God's plan unfolding in a way we might not fully grasp yet, it makes the whole thing more trustworthy, don't you think? Not just on this topic, but on everything.
The second takeaway is be careful about date setting.
Mm-hmm.
You shared some pretty intense examples of this. Those pamphlets, 88 Reasons Why Christ Will Return in 1988, and those radio prophecies during the Gulf War. Yikes.
Those are good examples of something that's happened throughout history, unfortunately. People try to pinpoint the date of Christ's return, often by interpreting current events through prophecy. Mathewson says don't do that. The New Testament itself says there might be a delay, so be careful.
It's a good wake-up call, isn't it? We got to hold on to that awareness that Christ could come back any second. But we also got to avoid the trap of thinking we can know exactly when. It's about living in that tension wisely.
Absolutely. We shouldn't get cynical or dismissive just because some folks got it wrong in the past. But at the same time, don't think you've cracked God's code. We need both perspectives to live faithfully and responsibly.
Which leads us to maybe the most important part, holy living right now. Mathewson says the whole point of this teaching on Christ's return, both the coming soon and the waiting, it's to motivate us to live differently, to live in a way that pleases God today.
That's it. Revelation wasn't written to be some chronological roadmap of the future. It's a call to action, to be faithful, to resist anything that goes against God's will.
Mm.
Back then, it was standing up to the Roman Empire. For us, it's about living out the values of God's kingdom every day.
He points to that amazing vision in Revelation chapters 21 and 22, the new creation. It's all about believers ruling with Christ as kings and priests right there with God. And then he connects it back to chapter 1, verse 5, where believers are already called the kingdom of priests.
It's powerful. If our future is going to be full of worship, justice, total holiness, then shouldn't we be living that out now? Like Mathewson says, how we live today, it might be the only glimpse of that amazing future some people ever get. So whether Christ returns tomorrow or in 100 years, we should be living in a way that honors God, that shows what his kingdom's all about. It's less about figuring out the when and way more about living out the how right now.
So after this deep dive into Dr. Mathewson's teaching, what's the takeaway?
Yeah.
Revelation. And it doesn't have this simple one-track view of Christ's return. Instead, it holds these two ideas together. We're expecting him any minute, but we also know there might be a wait. It's not that prophecy got it wrong. It's this wise way to keep us ready, encouraging us to be patient and committed to a life that's, well, holy.
And the exact timing. That's still God's secret. Our job is to live faithfully, knowing both are possible, no more date setting. Instead, focus on living out the heart of God's kingdom in everything you do.
Which brings us to a final question for you to think about. How does knowing all this, this balanced view from the New Testament, how does it change how you see your responsibilities right now and your hopes for the future? It's something worth really chewing on. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.